This is an interview with Abu Amina Bilal Phillips, author of various Islamic books, including Ibn Taymiyyah's essay on the jinn, or demons. To begin with, a first question. Who are the jinns, Brother Bilal? How are they defined?
الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على رسول الكريم وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. All praise due to Allah and may Allah's peace and blessings be on His last Prophet Muhammad صلى الله عليه وسلم and on all those who follow the path of righteousness until the last day. The jinn represent one of the orders of spiritual beings as defined by Allah in the Quran and by the last Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam in his sunnah or his pronouncement. From the Islamic point of view, there are three orders of spiritual beings: the angels, the soul, human soul, and the jinn. The angels, the Prophet explained, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him, were created from light. Angels were created from light. Man created from clay, the element, the earth. And the jinn were created from fire, from an elemental fire, not necessarily the fire that we know in this life, but a fire as defined by God. Not that they are and continue to be fire, just as the angels are not light in and of themselves, just as man isn't in and of himself clay. He has changed, though his origin is from those elements, he is not still clay. So similarly, the angels are not looked at as being light per se now, but that is the origin of their creation. And similarly, the jinn, their origin is that of fire. Now, the angels, according to the descriptions in the Quran, do not disobey God. They are beings whom Allah has created to serve certain purposes in the universe. They fulfill His command. They do not disobey Him in any way at all. On the other hand, the jinn and mankind have a free will. Allah has given them a free will and ability to choose between good and evil. Allah has made mankind superior to the jinn. This is Allah's choice. Just as within the other created beings of this world, He has made certain beings superior to other beings. Man has been made superior to the jinn. However, both have the ability to choose between right and wrong and will be judged on the day of judgment based on the choices they made and will receive either paradise or punishment in hell, continual, at the end of this world.
Are there good jinns? Are there bad jinns? What is the difference, if so?
Well, as I stated, the jinn, just like men, have a choice between good and evil. So it means naturally that there are believers amongst the jinn as there are believers amongst mankind, and disbelievers amongst the jinn as there are disbelievers amongst mankind. They may follow the various religions that exist amongst men, or may have religions of their own. And those who are believers will be righteous to varying degrees, just as believers amongst humans are righteous to varying degrees. Some are more righteous than others. But all being from Allah's creation are capable of making errors. So amongst the jinn you have believers who are very good, very righteous, others who are mediocre, others who are sinful, and you have those who are disbelievers who may do certain acts which may appear to us to be good, but their intent is evil. Now, according to the Quranic teaching, the angels were commanded to bow to Adam. And there was amongst the angels a jinn by the name of Iblis, who is commonly known as Satan, who had been elevated to this position due to certain qualities which God had given him. However, when he was commanded to bow along with the angels, he refused to bow. And his argument was that he was superior to man, who was created from clay when he was created from fire. And so his pride led him to disobey God. And it is because of this that pride is considered the original sin from an Islamic point of view. It is what led Satan to disobey God and cause himself to be cursed eternally. And man, similarly, when he falls under the influence of pride, turns away from God and may disobey God and cause himself also to be damned eternally. So the Prophet, may Allah peace and blessings be upon him, had said that no one who has a mustard seed's worth of pride in his heart will enter paradise.
Brother Bilal, in what form would you say that these jinns, the good ones and the bad ones, appeared to the human senses? Do they appear only at night, only Friday night, Saturday night? I mean, how do they appear? In what sense?
In general, the jinn are invisible to human eyes. As a norm, the majority of the jinn are invisible. Though some of them take physical forms, which have been defined by the Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him, they may take some relatively permanent physical forms, like that of snake, certain snakes, also the black dog, the dog which is completely black. These are amongst the forms that the Prophet defined as being common among the physical forms that jinns may appear in. However, of the jinns, and you have three basic classes that the Prophet, may Allah peace and blessings be upon him, defined. There are certain jinns which are limited to certain areas of the earth. They are not able to move around beyond the area that they exist in.
For example, east and west?
No, wherever they are on earth. There are another kind which are able to move around, and there's some which live basically on an atmospheric level, here. Right, there are three sort of stages or states that, you know, that they exist in. Those, obviously, amongst those which are on the ground are those which have the some of these animal forms, I think. But the other jinns also, who are normally invisible, may appear in human form or as images, statues, etc. They may enter into statues or places and make sounds from these places. They may also enter into human dreams. Prophet Muhammad, may Allah peace and blessings be upon him, said that dreams are of three types. You have one type which is from God, two dreams wherein God shows us something of the future and it comes true, either directly in the sense that we see a very clear image which sometime later we end up living, or indirectly where we see something which is somewhat vague and it goes to our subconscious, and then a certain circumstance arises or we go to a certain place and we have this feeling, haven't we been here before? Haven't I done this before? It's called in English and from the French, déjà vu. Now, this is also a product of this true dream which God gives to man as a means of showing him that there are powers beyond him, that God is there. Because no matter how an atheist, one who denies the existence of God, may feel about the non-existence of God, this is clear evidence to him when he has such dreams or experiences such experiences, that there are forces beyond him which he cannot put his finger on. And this leads him to realization of God. The other category of dreams are the regurgitation of your daily affairs. You read a novel, you know, a detective novel, and then you're dreaming about being that detective. You have met somebody that day, and then that, in your dream you're discussing with that person, traveling with the person, or whatever. This is a normal pattern which also takes place in the dreams. And there's a third category, which are satanic dreams, where Satan, the evil jinn, may come in and influence your dreams, where you may find yourself going to do things which are prohibited, you know, things which you know are wrong. You end up being involved in them in your dreams. Or you find yourself, you know, experiencing very fearful, very horrible type dreams, which puts a kind of a fear in you, where you come out of those dreams, you know, trying to seek some kind of solace or some kind of support, you know, mechanism which may not be according to the will of God. You may end up into idolatry to seek some kind of support. Or there may be dreams which give you some kind of idea that you are superior to others or that you are God. So these type of dreams may come, the satanic ones may come in a number of different ways. But ultimately, they are the dreams which lead you to sinful acts, either on a physical level, where you commit certain physical acts which are prohibited, or on a spiritual level, where you make certain claims for yourself, or you get yourself involved in forms of worship, which involve worshipping God's creation instead of worshipping God. So, the jinn may appear in physical form, in the form of certain animals, or they may appear in the form of visions, where people see a vision of the Christ child, or of Jesus on the cross, various things like this, or they may come into the dreams. But the main purpose of the appearance of the jinn, especially in the form of illusions, of visions, or in the dreams, is to draw a man into shirk, into idolatry, some form of idolatry. This is the common thread. Because just as an evil person is not satisfied or happy until he has drawn everybody around him into evil, similarly amongst the jinn, those that are evil will try to draw human beings into idolatry, the ultimate evil.
What can they eventually do to the human mind? I mean, to the human being. Do they have a power, a physical power, to make someone do something that they normally would not do? What is the ultimate power, let us say, of these creatures?
Well, God has said in the Quran very clearly that, in reference to the jinn, evil jinn, that they had no power over man. No ultimate power over man. They only invited and we obeyed.
Whispered?
Through the whispering, as in the last chapter of the Quran, where we seek refuge in God, the whisperer comes into our hearts, whispers evil to us. Through the whispering, it may be from the evil among mankind making direct suggestions, you know. Or through our dreams, it could come in a variety of different ways.
Can we cite that verse, that chapter in the Quran? You said there's a direct reference to the jinn in the chapter of the Holy Quran. Can you recite that verse?
الَّذِي يُوَسْوِسُ فِي صُدُورِ النَّاسِ, the one which whispers into the hearts of mankind, مِنَ الْجِنَّةِ وَالنَّاسِ, from among the jinn as well as among mankind. So these evil influences, whisperings of evil which cause us or call us to sin, it may be from the world of the jinn, or it could very well be from the world of men. This is why you find in the Quran where God refers to shayateen al-jinni wal-ins, the satans or the devils amongst the jinn and amongst mankind.
So that clearly indicates that there's another form of being other than the human being. Correct?
There's another
form of life other than the life of human beings as we know it.
Sure, you have the chapter called the jinn in the Quran. As the chapter which speaks about the jinn.
The demons.
Yeah, well, you know, demons actually is not a fair translation of the term jinn. But generally speaking, from a Christian point of view, they tend to look at all of the spiritual forces outside of man, generally speaking, outside of the angels, as being demons. Whereas, so this may be a loose translation of the term jinn. However, it is only the evil amongst them that we may really call demons. From a Christian point of view, they consider the souls, the spirits which may possess a man or possess a place or whatever, these are from living beings who died under tragic circumstances or whatever. Their souls may wander around the earth and you know, possess other people, whatever. However, from an Islamic point of view, this is not the case. The person, when he dies, his soul cannot no longer influence this world. He is cut off. He enters into a state known as the barzakh. This is a state between the life of this world and until the judgment. He's in a state, a suspended state, where he no longer has any influence in this world.
Suspended animation, maybe?
Well, not that. In a sense, but he's just in a suspended state, or limbo, we could call it. You know,
until
the judgment. The soul, you know, is reunited with the body, and he's brought to judgment, and then goes to either heaven or hell, depending on some of his deeds, the greater or lesser.
Okay, then. So, who are affected by jinn? Every human being, every form of creation, ants, cucarachas, roaches, flies, mosquitoes, animals. Who is affected directly and or indirectly by jinn?
Well, we know that the human beings may be affected by the jinn. In terms of the other animals of creation, we do from reports that have been made that, you know, that the jinn may enter into, just as they enter into solids, and this is mentioned in the Quran, where after Musa, Prophet Musa, alayhi salam, had passed over the Red Sea, and his people, remember, he left them to go and seek audience with God, and the people who stayed behind had made this golden calf, right? And the calf started to talk to them, you see, which, as if this calf had come alive. The evil jinn had entered into the calf and, you know, created an impression for the people, as they do around the world. You know, people who deal in idolatry, they will tell you about going to the statues and the statues talking to them. You know, people who believe in the Virgin Mary, whatever, they have their statues and they stay there long enough with the statue and then the statue starts to talk to them. You know, these are the influences of the jinn. So if they can enter into a physical being, you know, which are, say, created objects, carved objects, etc., we don't doubt that this can take place in the case of animals. You know, you have a number of cases where, for example, like Son of Sam, you know, who was, who had executed a number of people there, you know, in New York City, when he was put to trial, he said that this black dog used to come to him and used to tell him to go and kill, used to talk to him. Right? Of course, the psychiatrist considered the man just to be, you know, insane. And they didn't give any weight to the possibility that the dog could have been actually communicating with him, talking to him in that sense, or that really a being could have been inside talking to the dog, because modern psychiatry has totally ruled out the supernatural. Whereas, you know, from an Islamic perspective, Islamic point of view, there have been many cases recorded, you know, where the jinn may enter into birds or other animals, and this may be a means of drawing people into various forms of idolatry. Some people who claim, for example, sainthood in the past, who were actually evil individuals, I mean, they would create impressions on the people, you know, for example, they would go and the birds, you know, would give salams to them, for example, would greet them. And of course, the people who were with them would be just awed totally. You know, this is a clear sign that this man is a man of God. He's, you know, a man close to God, if he's not God himself. You see, in this way, people were drawn into idolatry. So the jinn may affect human beings from all categories. People who are involved in shirk, etc. Shirk being idolatry. And it tends to be more concentrated amongst them. People who are involved in clear worship of God in pure form, it tends to be less amongst them. You know, When people are involved in sinful activities, it tends to be more amongst them because it tends to encourage them to keep them in those activities.
Some of those people that are God conscious, people that are striving to do the right thing, people that are striving to be at peace with the Creator, are less likely to be affected or deviated from the straight path.
They're less likely to be affected by the jinn, but they may still be affected. You see, of course, most of us have experienced before just coming to Islam, you know, where all these thoughts go racing through our minds, you know, all kinds of factors seem to happen around us, trying to get us not to make that step. You know, this is the last ditch effort, you know, the evil forces of the jinn, etc., to try to keep us from making the step. Once you make the step, then they give up. They may come back at another point in time, you know, if they feel that you are, you know, because we have our ups and downs. We're not always, you know, on a high. Right. So, you know, when we're in states of being down, they may swing into play and try to whisper some things in our hearts or, you know, in different ways to cause us to seek aid from other than Allah to some form of idolatry. So it doesn't mean that once a person becomes a believer, automatically all these things cease. It may cease, it may continue with them for some time as they strive to build themselves, eventually it may stop. It may stop immediately and it may come back again at another point in time. But the thing that the believer has to know is that these forces ultimately, you know, are not greater than Allah. That he or she may be tested for periods of time by these kinds of trials, but if they hold on firmly to their belief in Allah, ultimately they will defeat these.
So then, when the jinns attack a person, or when they possess a person, what can that person do? Take two aspirins and call the doctor in the morning? I mean, what can that person do to be relieved from this possession?
Okay, if a person is possessed, the first thing that they should do is that they should try to ensure that they are doing what they are supposed to be doing as far as the teachings of the religion go, you know, the true teaching. One, they should insist on purity as much as possible. They should try to maintain a state of purity, that is making wudu, ablutions, you know, whenever they try to maintain that state.
Washing the hands,
the face, the body, and so on, so, you know, staying in this state, this preparatory state for worship, right? This is a state of purification. Try to maintain that state at all times.
Tahara?
Yes. Then, furthermore, one should make, you know, extra prayers, and especially outside of the formal prayers, we call salah, the five times daily prayers, one should try to make extra prayers at night. One should read the Quran often, have the Quran read over them, you know. There are certain prayers which the Prophet, may Allah peace and blessings upon him, gave as a means of breaking such spells, but specifically the last two chapters of the Quran, known as Falaq and Nas. And these two chapters were actually revealed to the Prophet, may Allah peace and blessings upon him, to break a spell which had affected the Prophet, cast by a magician, a person involved also, because magical spells affect people through the aid of the jinn.
Can you recite that, those two places?
The two chapters which are recited, and they're called the Mu'awwadatan, that is, the two means of seeking refuge in God from evil. Right? The first of the two, called Surah Al-Falaq, it begins, A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitan Ar-Rajim, I seek refuge in the name of Allah from the evil Satan, the cursed Satan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful. قُلْ أَعُوذُ بِرَبِّ الْفَلَقِ. Say, I seek refuge in the Lord of the Dawn. مِنْ شَرِّ مَا خَلَقِ. From the evil of what has been created. وَمِنْ شَرِّ غَاسِقٍ إِذَا وَقَرَ. From the evil of the night when it falls. وَمِنْ شَرِّ النَّفَّاثَاتِ فِي الْعُقَدِ. And from the evil of the witches who blow on knots. ومن شر حاسد إذا حسد. And from the evil of the envier when he or she is envious. The second chapter, قل أعوذ برب الناس. I seek refuge in the Lord of mankind. مالك الناس. The king of mankind. إله الناس. The god of mankind. من شر الوسواس الخناس. From the evil of the whisperer. الذي يوسوس في صدور الناس. Who whispers into the hearts of men. من الجنة والناس. From among the jinn and among mankind.
Brother Bilal, what other set of instructions, ayats, chapters from the Quran can you cite to us in regards to this phenomenon for protection? How can someone protect himself or herself from these types of activities?
Well, the verse, which is verse number 255 from the second chapter of the Quran, known as Al-Baqarah. This verse, called the verse of the throne, or the verse of the footstool, has been recommended by the Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him, as a means also of protecting oneself from evil. And the text of the verse is as follows. Allahu la ilaha illahu. Allah, there is no God but He. Al-Hayyul Qayyum, the living, the eternal. La ta'khudhuhu sinatun wa la nawm, neither slumber nor sleep overtakes him. Lahu ma fis samawati wa ma fil ard, all that is in the heavens and the earth belong to him. Man dhalladhi yashfa'u 'indahu illa bi'idhnih. Who can intercede on behalf of others to him except by his permission? Ya'lamu ma bayna aydihim wa ma khalfahum. He knows what is in front of them and what is behind them. Wa la yuhituna bi shay'in min 'ilmihi illa bima sha'a. They will not grasp any of his knowledge except what he wills. وَسِعَ كُرْسِيُّهُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ. His footstool extends over the heavens and earth. وَلَا يَؤُدُهُ حِفْظُهُمَا. And he is not made tired by governing them. وَهُوَ الْعَلِيُّ الْعَظِيمُ. He is the transcendent, the magnificent.
Okay. Brother Bilal, I mean,
I could also add that the making of the adhan, the Prophet, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him, has stated that when the adhan has ended, he will return. When the iqama is given, he again, so the saying of the adhan or the iqama is also a means of driving away the jinn for an instant.
This is for a Muslim believer.
Yeah, this is specifically for a Muslim believer. However, if a person, for example, is seeking Islam, you know, and they do have some sort of consciousness of the oneness of Allah, and they are seeking out the truth, it is possible that they may use these and they may work for them also. Because ultimately it's a question of sincerity of one seeking refuge in God, that will provide for him or her, you know, a way, a protection.
Can jinns make a person sick, Brother Bina?
Yes.
I mean, can they cause this person to be emotionally disturbed, emotionally out of his mind? Can this person have headaches? Start seeing things, can this person become, sick with no known medical cure?
Sure. There have been many cases, those people who are involved in exorcism, you know, I've reported many cases of this. You know, I've visited exorcists in various parts of the Muslim world and discussed with them different cases that they've had, and, you know, observed some of the cases myself, talked with
exorcist,
some of the patients.
Someone who takes out?
People who are involved in removing the jinn or possessing spirits from the individual. People who are Muslims who are using Muslim methodology of psychic or animalism. And they have reported, you know, that this is the case. And actually, there are instances, even in the time of the Prophet, may Allah be blessed upon him, where people were brought to the companions of the Prophet who were, you know, in a state of madness or semi-madness, or people who were ailing, and they were given verses of the Quran or even Surah Al-Fatiha, also the first chapter of the Quran. This was used by the Quran, by the companions of the Prophet, may Allah be blessed upon him. Recited over those who were sick because of these spiritual forces, the jinn, and they became well from it. So we know that the jinn can affect a person physically, could affect a person mentally. A person who goes insane, this could be a result of spiritual possession, jinn possession. Not to say that every insane person is a person who is possessed by the jinn, but this could also be among the cases. Of course, relative to God, a person who loses his senses is not held to account anymore, you know, for whatever he or she says or does. But we know there are, you know, cases that were brought to the Prophet Muhammad, may Allah be blessed upon him. One woman, for example, who came and expressed to the Prophet, may Allah be blessed upon him, that she would fall under possession and would take off her clothes. So she asked if he would pray to God and have this condition of her relieved, you know, the possessing forces being held back or driven out. And he said, I can do that, but if you are patient, you know, you will earn paradise for yourself. So she asked that he pray that she not remove her clothes, because of course this is something very embarrassing. You know, so he prayed for her, and that's part of Islam. And the possession part is a trial for her, that if she bore, that, you know, the reward that the Prophet promised her was paradise. But this is a case where she was physically coming under this influence, and it caused her to do this. You know, normally we call such people, you know, exhibitionists or, you know, etc. So they have this compulsive urge comes over them at certain times to take off all their clothes and just, you know, expose themselves. Not to say every exhibitionist comes out of this category. There are some who are just perverts, you know, want to get their jollies off by doing these type of things. But normally speaking, there are cases of people who are overcome by this urge. And in fact, we believe this is a form of possession which takes place at a certain point in time. And it may come in the form of illnesses which doctors cannot determine the source of. It may come in the form of epilepsy.
Seizures.
One, you know, epileptic fits. You know, as a matter of fact, the medical profession has admitted that there is a large portion of epileptic cases which are caused by factors unknown to them. So they divide their cases into two categories. That which have biological causes, which are known, and those which is the larger portion, which have no known causes. They just appear. And what you find is that those people who are involved in exorcism are most successful in this category.
Very interesting. So then, in response to that question, I mean, can jinns make a person sick? I mean, it's obvious that this has been documented medically throughout history, and this is still a phenomenon that is very much in existence today within the medical profession throughout the world, and within religious activities as well.
Of course, there's one thing one should keep in mind here, that the process of exorcism occurs in all of the various religious systems. You will find people who are involved in various forms of idolatry, you know, Buddhism, Hinduism, all kinds of tree worship, you know, all kinds of things, exercising people, you know, and doing so successfully. The explanation that one would naturally have to give to this, how did this take place, you know, if exorcism involves removing evil forces from a person, and this is something by the aid of God, does God aid those who are involved in idolatry also? a question where, you know, that's often asked. The fact is that we must remember that the jinn or the evil forces may leave a person willingly or unwillingly. If idolatry, the belief in idolatry, what we call shirk, is confirmed in the presence of one who is possessed by the people around or by the person who is himself or herself possessed, then that is sufficient. The jinn may leave that person, go on to somebody else. So if a priest comes and he says, in the name of Buddha, or in the name of Jesus Christ, you know, he makes the sign of the cross, he sprinkles holy water, whatever, and the person becomes cured, it's not because this has actually cured that person, but because their idolatrous beliefs have been confirmed. And this is what the jinn wants from them in any case. Whereas in the case of the recitation of the Quran, the jinn does not leave because it is pleased. It leaves because it is forced to leave. So you will find people who are involved in voodoo, you know, various forms of devil worship, satanic worship, who will come and apparently cure people. Why? Because they are in collusion with these evil forces. They may even be the ones who direct the evil forces to certain people, so these people will end up having to come to them, and they appear to cure the people, and then those people become their followers. Those people are drawn into their circle. So it's a means of trapping people also. And the apparent cures are not really cures, but just the jinn or evil jinn leaving, you know, having succeeded in what was attempting to do.
Very interesting. Okay.
Can jinn eventually cause the death, the demise of a person, of people? Do they have this power, this ability?
I don't think so. I think from what, you know, we have understood from the teachings of the Quran and the Sunnah, that this will not, the jinn will not in and of itself cause the death deliberately. It may happen accidentally, like a person falls into a seizure and swallows his tongue. It's not that the jinn is pushing the tongue down the throat, but in that state of seizure, the person may accidentally die. Right? People who get into epileptic seizures choke on their own tongues and die, right?
Suffocation,
yeah. Or, you know, a person may be in a particular place or position and become overcome and fall from a height and hurt, kill themselves. It may happen in that kind of fashion. Or a person may become so despondent, giving up all kind of hope and kill themselves. You see, not being able to bear this anymore. They feel they can't bear it anymore, whatever. And they commit suicide. To you as an outsider, it may appear that they have been driven to this and, you know, it's like they've been possessed and they were killed due to that possession. But in fact, it's the person not being able to hang in there and deal with what they're affected by, and they taking their own lives. But as far as, you know, I have understood from the teaching of the Quran and from the Sunnah, it is not possible for the jinn to cause a death unless a person has killed a jinn. Because we have an instance in the time of the Prophet, may Allah peace and blessings upon him, where one of the companions killed a jinn that was in a snake form, or attempted to. He wounded the jinn, and the jinn killed him. They both died. So it is possible in such cases. But as a norm, we would say it would not be so.
The same then can be said of a black cat biting or, you know, possessing, going for the jugular vein of a human being, something to that extent, and causing the physical demise of a person. A cat symbolizing one of the mentioned...
Or a dog, you know.
Or a dog,
yes. I mean, it's possible, you know, in this I mean, where they're equally able to, you know, one may harm the other may harm one, you know, this one-on-one kind of situation, I guess it is possible. Where it is a case of possession, where to say now that the jinn may take over your body and cause cancer to kill you, or to cause a cancer to develop and you die from that. This is the type of thing that we say we do not believe so, because Allah said that they have no control over us. That says they cannot control us to the point of killing us. But in one of the other forms, as a snake or as a dog or whatever, that they may attack us, you know, under some circumstances and kill us, just as we may kill them.
I can cite the case to you, Brother Bilal, of a person who accepted Islam. More specifically, this is the case of a young lady who became a Muslim. She was at one time a confirmed atheist, according to her. She became Muslim, but prior to her becoming Muslim and being what she considered to be an atheist, she used to see certain
visions.
She used to hear and listen to certain sounds, to certain forms of communication that she was unable to have explained to her intellectually. This is not the average young lady type. I mean, this is someone who is highly educated, you know, well developed, mature, and the same goes for her sister. Okay, her blood sister claimed to have seen her cousin, their cousin, who was killed in an automobile accident, and their beloved cousin used to come to them in their dream, apparently while asleep, and as well as during non-sleeping activities. They used to talk to each other, also they claimed. Now, when one of the young ladies became a Muslim, she accepted Islam, the true religion of Almighty God, she stopped. These activities were lessened or almost became nullified or nil, whereas her sister continues to this very day to see these images, these visions, and to hear these sounds and forms of communication. What do you attribute that to? I mean, how is that possible? How is that explained?
Well, this could very well be a case of, you know, the jinn utilizing personal weaknesses. You know, these sisters, for example, dearly loved this cousin of theirs. So that puts them in a state of weakness. By appearing in the form of the cousin, you know, it keeps them attached to the dead, and keeps them in a, you know, a state of imbalance, because half they will not be believing this; it will seem something unbelievable, but yet it is real to them. So they're in a state of mental imbalance, and it is in this kind of a state that they may be drawn into idolatry. Even the sister, for example, as an atheist, you know, because the atheist, and it's possible to get out of that and get into Islam. They may be, this is a way of trying to draw that sister along with the other one. I don't know what she was an atheist also, or she was a Catholic, or what is she?
A Catholic by profession,
name.
By name, but, you know, not one of a serious practice.
Hmm. But, It could have been a means of trying to draw them back into full-fledged Catholicism. Maybe because of the fact that there were certain signs indicating that they were, you know, moving towards what may have been the truth. You know, of course, when they failed with the atheist sister who became a Muslim, then, you know, they tried to concentrate their efforts, say, on this sister who was not, so possibly she would not take that path also, hoping that she would, you know, reach out to one of the other voodoo type channels or, you know, spiritualist channels, which involves idolatry. So the attacks or the influence may have ceased for the sister who accepted Islam temporarily, there's no guarantee that it may not come back again. It's one thing we should understand, you know, that just because one accepts Islam doesn't mean automatically this ceases totally. But, you know, the likelihood is that's a lot less. Their ability to affect such a person would be much less than if they came back, because that person believes in God and trusts in God. They turn to God, it would tend to ward them off, keep them off. Whereas the other sister who has no protection as such, you know, she would be subject to these influences until it was certain. I mean, especially if she, for example, has seen her sister become a Muslim, she may be thinking about becoming a Muslim. So these influences may actually even increase to try to discourage her from taking that possible path. You know? So, we could say this is a possible explanation. I can't say that that's what it is. One would have to, you know, look more into the circumstances, see what the state of the family, the parents, what type of situation was there in the house that they were living in. So, there's a lot of factors that one would all have to take into account. But it's definitely, I mean, these visions are something which people experience all around the world. And my mother, for example, Jidda, told me about seeing somebody in the living room in her apartment that she was in there just recently, a few months back. You know, and she wanted to get a hold of me, call me to make her prayers for her, whatever. But she wasn't able to get a hold of me, so she, you know, made a cross and put it over her bedroom door, and sure enough, it stopped. You know, once she fell back into whole-scale, you know, Christianity, the Christian Trinitarian idolatrous concept, then the process stopped. But I tried to explain that to her, that it didn't stop because you used the cross, but because, not because using of the cross caused it to stop, but because when you used the cross and confirmed what it wanted for you, because you were maybe reflecting on Islam and, you know, the truth and the oneness of God and these kind of things, you know, that this is just to sink you a little deeper into these kind of beliefs, you know, to make it much more difficult for you to get out of the idolatry, even though all around you people are professing, you know, the true belief in one God, you know, which you in the deep, in the depths of your heart know to be true.
Did, and to this day, you know, 7 months later, did Mama reflect, after that?
Well, you know, I tried to give that explanation to her, but of course she doesn't want to hear that explanation, right? So what she wants to is just good enough for her, is that the, you know, the tried and proven cross, you know, has done the trick. So let me just pray for her, man, you know. That's how it is.
Brother Bilal, in continuing the case of this sister who accepted Islam after being a confirmed, according to her, atheist, she has also shared with us that while her mother, being in a state of sickness, in a state of grave pain, you know, she's ailing. She's currently, you know, it's been confirmed that she has cancer. And she's in a great deal of pain and so forth and so on. Now, one of the things that she, as a Muslima, wanted to do was to take away from her house the statues and images and candle altars and things of that sort that a typical Catholic household possesses, and much, much more. Even her non-Muslim blood sister, you know, agreed to do this as an effort to purify the house spiritually. Her mother reneged that her mother wished not to do this. Let her, if she's going to die, let her die with all her crosses or her candles or her images and so forth. Now, is it possible that maybe the jinns want her to make her to believe that those statues, or that these statues can do something, you know, possess some sort of cure
some sort of pure power, some sort of ailment, some sort of prescription that modern or current medical science has yet to do?
Sure. As I mentioned before, you know, you will find cases where the statues may speak to the people. You had a case of some statues where it would start to weep at certain points in time. You had one in Ireland where it started to shake. You know, statue of Virgin Mary would start to rock back and forth.
And in Portugal,
maybe weeping in Portugal. You know, in Yugoslavia, they had a vision. I mean, the point is that these factors will be there. These are means of encouragement to people who are involved in idolatry to hold on firmly to their idol. Of course, I would not doubt that, you know, this whispering would be there in the mind of the sick mother, you know, that if you give these things up, you know, you will be damned to hell, and, you know, those type of fearful thoughts, you know, would be put in such a person's mind, especially if they're on their deathbed or, you know,
helpless, they're in pain. Mm. So that the understanding basically is that one should have the clear-cut vision that death, life, and death comes from Allah, from the one true God, that cure for any ailment comes from the one true God, Allah, and Allah alone, as opposed to statues, man-made created objects.
Even as a Muslim, when you take medicine, you know, it is incorrect for one to believe that the taking of the medicine is going to cure that individual.
Say like a cough, for cough syrup?
Whatever.
Aspirin?
Anything. Taking any medical treatment, it is actually incorrect for a Muslim to believe that this treatment is going to cure them. They have to have the belief that God will cure them through the medium of this treatment.
Mm.
So when they take it, they should really be reflecting on God's power to cure them. And when they are cured, not, you know, thanking the doctor and putting all the power to the pills, but thanking God. This is the correct belief, although most people are not really aware of it. This is how when one takes a pill, he says, Bismillah, in the name of Allah, in the name of God, ask God to cure you through this medium. Even when you go on the operation table, the doctor, he is performing the operation. But it is Allah who determines whether that operation is successful or not. Because how many skillful doctors get on the table and their patients die for reasons unknown to them after having done the same operation they've been doing for years, and people seemingly to get well from these operations, yet there are cases where people die. Because it's not ultimately their operation which cures that person and saves that person. It's Allah. If Allah has destined the time to die, and the time is in the course of that operation, well then that's when the person is going to die, no matter what is done. But of course, we don't know. So we as individuals are obliged to use whatever means God has given us, of technology, etc., to the best degree that we can. But at the same time, believing that it is Allah, God, who will cure us or allow us to be cured or not.
So everything gets back to, once again, as it always does, to intention. The medium, understanding that the medium that modern science, modern technology has available today is not the end all. It is not the pure all. It is a means by which we use at our disposal to reflect upon the greatness of the Creator.
Well, it's a means which God has submitted for us to take pleasure in the things that He has given us. while recognizing that it is from Him and glorifying Him even more. Because the more technology we have is the more that Allah has blessed us. And it means the more that we are required to thank Him. Because God has made everything in this universe submitted to us as a blessing. But at the same time, we have a duty to Him to submit ourselves to Him who created us. Submit our will to His will, because He knows what's best for us. He knows the forces that can harm us, whether physical or spiritual, and He knows that which will help us. So by submitting our wills to His will, we choose the way which is best for us in this life. See, the mistake that people hold, that what has been commanded by God is sort of like a burden. It's making life difficult for us, but in fact not. It's really a release. It's freedom. When we submit our will to the will of God, we then liberate ourselves from submission to the will of mankind, of creation. Submitting ourselves to our own desires. When we submit ourselves to God, we liberate ourselves from the material world.